You are listening to episode 117 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, The Uncanny Zeitgeist.
Episode 117 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December 22nd, 2013. I am the hipster hairstyled Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my present rapping brother James Furlough.
Yeah, that's me. Though yeah. I'm not a great present rapper, I will confess. Yo, yo, I rap at the presents, and I get what you want, dog. Man,
I'm sure glad you did that, because I was about to, and it was going to be just as embarrassing as what you just did. So thank you for sparing
not a good,
me.
I'm not a good Christmas rapper. My wife is rolling her eyes right now, just shaking her head. That was painful. You know,
at least we were both on the same page with that one. Yeah, I decided.
You know what though? I'll be honest. I didn't think about it until I said it out loud, and then I went, "Rapper, yeah, I'll go with it." I was feeling it. There was a beat in my head. It just didn't translate. I couldn't even get that to rhyme. I was like, "To my bed." I was like, "What?
Yeah, dang it!
Whatever."
Yeah, I decided to go full hipster with my hairstyle. I trimmed the beard back. I honed it, but I left the mustache.
It looks like the stash is still,
It is in full bloom. And then the haircut, I went like a one on the sides. My friend.
Did you do it yourself?
No.
Did you use like a switchblade?
That would have been true hipster style. Well, I did.
That's like Portland hipster.
I was gonna say I do use a straight blade for the parts that I shave. So there's that. That's pretty dang hipster.
That's amazing.
I know.
You
know,
really. So let me ask you. Are you going for the hipster thing? Like, you know, are you like, yeah, this is cool. I like it. Or is it just coincidence?
I intentionally tried to do it during 2008, back in 08, when I was up in Washington. I was like, man. These kids are so cool with their like hipster jeans and their, like hipster haircuts and their hipster music. I kind of got into the music scene up there, but I just couldn't pull off like the style and everything, partly because I was fat. And So it's nowadays it's just like it's one of those things where last year, you know, I'm losing weight, which has been fun, and I've always the beard has been my jam since like 2005. Like I've tried to grow a beard pretty much since the day that I decided I could fake it really poorly. I would try to do it. Mm. So the facial hair thing is not anything new.
Yeah, because in 05 you were what, a senior in high school? No, freshman in college.
Yeah, that was when I started. I was doing the goatee, the really dismal goatee back in 03. Was pathetic and sad, but not the full beard. It wasn't until I was in college that I finally went for it. Long before it became popular in the hipster subculture. The haircut's kind of a new addition.
Are you liking it? Are you no regrets?
I do. I do like it. I think it looks kind of cool. But yeah, these are my
okay.
Everybody makes fun of me because I look like Macklemore. I'm like, it's not a Macklemore, man. It's different.
A what?
Subtly,
I don't even know what
subtly.
That means.
Macklemore, you know, thrift
Macklemore?
Shop? Macklemore, the rapper, like, thrift shop. I'm going to pop some tags. I only got $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a come up. This is effing awesome. No, nothing?
Nope.
Wow.
That's okay.
Listen to the radio, man. It was like number two behind the best song ever by One Direction. Like, what the heck? Come on. This is pop culture at its best. But
if it's not on K-Love or talk radio, I'm probably not going to hear it.
You probably weren't going to hear this one. It's not a bad message, though. It's actually, that's one of the cool things about
that.
It.
I'm just, you know.
I know, but cool. I'm just saying. He swears he curses a little, but he's basically like, you know, don't waste all your money on fashion. You could buy stuff cheap at the thrift shop. This is really, it's a commercial for Goodwill. It's really what it is. Actually, they claim that prices at Goodwill went up a lot because of that song. Because they're like, everybody's coming here to shop for cool, you know, old
stuff. I love it.
Anyways, we're not here to talk about Macklemore and my hairstyles. We are a little bit, but not really.
A little bit.
What we're actually here to talk about this week, and like every week, will be technology and the continuing corporate opera, or Santa Claus. But before we get into the heart of the show, that what we mean by the corporate opera is we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing and we buy.
Yes.
Christmas. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure so that he doesn't get fired.
Yeah, two of them, actually. The first one is I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions, even though they gave me like a week and a half off and they're awesome, and so I don't really have to represent them at all right now. Mm-hmm. Still think it's important that you all be jealous of me. And the second disclosure is we have a sponsor for this episode.
What the heck? So wait.
I know.
Does that
I know.
Mean, are you going to give me money?
No.
Oh, what the heck?
Well, let me put it this way. They don't know that they sponsored us.
Oh,
but
okay.
I think what they made is so awesome.
Okay,
I'm letting them sponsor us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess.
You know, think of it as I will leave your favorite talk show unnamed. But you know how they like to say this show's presented by or featured by or
the general manager?
Yeah, the general manager. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
Where they will – what is it? They pick someone who – they always say something stupid or dumb, right? Or do they
pick someone
who says something profound?
The general – under the tutelage of – it's always like some – whoever's like the topic of the day. So if it's like Jay Carney's news talk show. So like today is brought to you, you know, we're under the tutelage of Jay Carney. Who always sounds like – I realize like his last name literally is like a carnival – like I just – what a rough position that man is in. I feel bad for him all the time.
So this – we're sponsored by something, and it's not because it's dumb. It's actually because it's awesome. I read about it on Lifehacker. And it's – for those of you out there who own a Mac, it's called Memory Clean. You can search for it on the Mac App Store.
Okay.
What it does is it cleans out your RAM's memory for you. They said this is especially important for, I hate to admit it, older computers like my own, where you start to notice a slowdown after you upgrade to, you know, certain new Maverick-ish OSSs. And because, you know, they're just more memory-intensive types of apps. And so what it will do is it'll tell you, here's how much free RAM you have. And then if you say, all right, clean that sucker out, it'll free up a bunch of space for you. Super, super awesome. And because you listen to this podcast, we have a deal with them through Apple where this will happen automatically, where if you just go and look it up, you can download it for free.
They'll know if you listen to it.
So they'll know. Don't worry about it. It's for free. It's on us. You're welcome as the sponsors. You just download it. It'll sit in your bar. You can obviously turn it off and on if you want. I have mine just turn on so I can always look at it because, again, it makes me kind of want to go out and get more RAM for my computer because I seem to be chronically low, which is annoying. I haven't installed it on Jesse's computer yet just because I haven't gotten my hands on it. But I want to put it on hers because she's got like 16 gigabytes of RAM and I've got like 4. And so I think that's all I have here. Let me see real quick. Yeah, I've got 4. And see, like right now I have 337 megabytes free. And usually when I'm not going to hit it right now because I think it'll cause problems. But when I do hit it, it'll bump me back up to like 2, which is nice. So
how do you make it do stuff? I just downloaded it and nothing is happening.
You got to open the app.
Well, okay, I tried that.
Window should pop up. It just says memory clean.
Yeah, but it's like supposed to have like a – it's supposed to be my tray or something?
Yeah, no, upper bar. Upper bar, upper right.
Oh, upper. Upper right.
I should
upper
say,
right?
Like, should be. Yeah, where like where your date and stuff is, where your notification tray is.
Oh, look at that.
Your finder.
Hey, how many gigs do you have free?
I'm 335 megabytes.
You have 300. You see, I only have 6 gigabytes free.
Oh, wow. There you go. You don't need it.
Yeah. Let's see.
Like I said, it's for older Macs, which mine unfortunately is starting to tip into that category, to the point where I'm like, I'm ready for a midlife kicker.
Yeah.
Of RAM, and because I can feel it when I have a lot of stuff open. But what's cool about this, instead of me going out and spending $100 on RAM, I just now monitor it, and when it starts to get super low, click clean memory, all of a sudden it speeds up again.
Nice.
It's kind of really cool, actually. So
that's really cool.
I thought it was neat.
Okay, yeah. That is neat. Thank you for sponsoring us.
Yeah, memory clean. Way good product. You saved me $100. So that's like paying me, essentially. Yeah, I'm not giving you a cut of that, sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I didn't get paid anything.
you know? There you go.
I'm just underutilizing my RAM. Cool.
You'll get over
cool,
it.
Cool. Yeah, probably.
Well, it's kind of fun if you open up obviously open up Photoshop or iMovie or Microsoft Word. You'll suddenly watch it drop way down. Like, yeah, Word. We know.
Cool.
Oh, so on to other stories.
No, wait.
No, you're not done yet. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. That was my
disclosure.
Yeah, that was your disclosure. Holy cow. So if you want to follow us throughout the week, go online. The internet, it's a cool thing they made. You can follow us at all sorts of different places. I am at Matthew D. Furlow, one word, all lowercase, on the Twitter. And my Instagram is it's just NextWiggin4. I don't think I put anything on the Instagram this week. I was all up on the Twitter. I was on the Twitter machine making fun of crowds and drivers. And the whole
just why you gotta follow you on both.
Yeah, exactly. You just get both of my jams, man. It's cool.
I am at James Furlow on the Twitter and jamesfurlow.com in the real web.
And if you want to follow, if you want to get all the clicks and links from this videos and whatnot from this podcast, we talked about a bunch of articles. Most of them we are stealing the real journalism from somebody else and just commenting on it. So if you want to find out where all of our source material is from, I have no idea what you're talking about. We put it in a convenient location called furloughbros.com. Go there. We also have links to the show, the podcast, where you can go to iTunes. You can get the show cuts, which is the shorter version of the show, a little bit easier to digest, a little bit easier to see what we're talking about. It's pretty cool, pretty neat. Nice little website. I check it out. And it's also great for the year in review, which I think is next week is going to be our year in review show, and then the week after is our predictions.
Well,
show,
I think
right?
we're going to talk about. I don't know, but we're going to talk about predictions of other people this week.
Yes, I'm super stoked for our prediction show because I'm this week. My goal is to listen to our prediction show from the beginning of this year because I've been thinking about it and I think we nailed it. Because the one thing that I said, I remember saying this, is that Apple wasn't going to come out with anything big this year. And I think I kind of questioned that mid-year. There was a couple of I'm not sure if I got this right or not. And turns out, nailed it. No product categories came up this year, which is kind of exciting. We made it.
And I'm taking everything in me right now not to ask for next year. We'll wait for that.
I know. Cause,
can you give a teaser? Can you give a teaser on what you're thinking right now?
I watch end of the year, definitely. No questions asked.
Okay.
Mostly because of an article that we're not going to talk about this week, but I'll have to reclaim. What?
Go ahead. You're good.
There's a LCD OLED company who basically their stock price quadrupled because everybody was like, their stock is gonna go up. And how do you know? And they're like, just trust us. they've made a deal with somebody this year and they're gonna sell a lot of it. Pretty exciting.
It's a good harbinger. Is that you said that word?
That was nice. It's a good word. I liked it.
Okay. Wasn't sure.
But Yeah, so this week.
We'll talk about it. All right, cool. I don't know when we're going to do it, but it's either this show or the next show.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get to
probably the next show, because there won't be any real news this week.
Stay tuned. Yeah,
stay tuned. Just listen to it all. But we will talk about other people's thoughts this week.
Yeah, because they're too
early. So you at least get that. But before then, I read about something that I know that you would love. Okay. You know the McLaren car?
I do. Something, it's one of my faves because it's wicked fast and super expensive.
Let me ask you this.
Tesla.
Total side here, but when was the first time you learned about the McLaren car?
It was before we went to England.
It's before then. Okay, I wasn't sure.
Because
I think for me, that's my first memory of one.
That's the first memory. That's the first time we saw one, because we walked by the McLaren dealership in London, and that was, what was that, 2000 something?
Early 2000 or 2001?
We were in high school. It was probably, we were both in high school.
Junior?
Yeah, so that was 2001. Sounds about right. So, yeah,
okay.
It was probably before that, probably not much before that.
Okay.
It was – obviously, I watched it on TV because I don't think the internet existed back then. So.
Not its current incantation.
Yeah. Not YouTube, that's for sure.
So these guys, they make cars that you and I can't buy.
Right.
Well.
Yet.
Shouldn't buy.
Now that we have a sponsor, we're on our way.
Yeah, that's right. We just need to let our sponsors know that they've sponsored us.
Yes.
Anyways, they have come out with a new design for windshield wipers.
Yeah.
What they're going to do is send ultrasound waves at 30 kilohertz across the windshield.
That's a lot of hertz.
Which will essentially keep rain and insects and stuff off of your window by literally vibrating it off.
It actually makes a lot of sense because it's
like a force field, essentially.
Well, it
of sound.
Like, if you've ever used like an ultrasonic bath, essentially that's what they're doing, and it's vibrate stuff at such a speed where it's not like it evaporates stuff, but it just prevents it from sticking. And they probably have some cool. It's probably
They said it will. It even stops it from actually reaching the windshield or most of the stuff, I guess. But pretty cool. I like how they're like, there's multiple benefits where they're like less things to break, no more regular wiper changes, you aren't scraping rubber across glass repeatedly. They're like, it's also fuel saving because you don't have this thing interfering with airflow.
Yeah, like, which is important on a McLaren because, they're all about.
And this is probably the final and the best benefit here is total confusion for anyone trying to clamp a flyer underneath one of your wiper blades.
Yeah, if you're parking your McLaren somewhere where that's a concern, you should not be parking your McLaren there. It's $1.5 million vehicle.
Really. Yeah, so their whole thing is like, obviously you and I will never are very strong that we won't get it. But they're like, if it actually works as advertised, you could start to see it in other cars.
Except, I was going to say, because one of the things that's interesting about this idea is that my suspicion is that there's actually some sort of a coating on the glass they're not talking about, something that makes it hydrophilic so that the water really doesn't stick.
Remember that one? We showed this. I wish I could remember it and was fast enough to pull this up. But we showed that one glass product that had the ketchup inside where, they showed the first example where the ketchup sticks. And then they said, okay, now we're putting the same ketchup in this other bottle. And they like this, turn it, and it just ran out like liquid and didn't stick it all to the glass. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Article video? I'm still waiting for like – I know. It was probably like 100 shows ago. And but I'm still like, man, let's make windshields out of that. That looked awesome.
Well, because if you were to put some sort of cool coating on it that made stuff not stick to it, and then make it so that anything that does just sort of by nature stick, you know, rest on it, would immediately like bounce its way off. Yeah, that would work really well. And it's cool. I was thinking about it because we just talked about a couple of month or two ago about that noise canceling.
Shindig.
I'm surprised that nobody's talked about putting those onto the windows of cars, you know, to like cancel out sound. And if you reverse that,
well, that's probably a safety thing, but.
Oh, that's a good point. But I mean, on the same, you know, on the same token, you know, if you were to, it essentially turn that up to 30 kilohertz, which is not hard. I mean, like most speakers are capable of. It's not a very expensive speaker, you know, and all of a sudden you're doing that. If it works, it's not an unreasonable technology to put into your windows, with one exception. You'd actually have to probably turn it up to about 70 kilohertz, which would probably achieve the same thing.
Why?
Because humans can't hear 30 kilohertz, but dogs and cats can. and basically what we'd do is we'd turn our entire fleet of vehicles into really loud, buzzing speakers for dogs and cats. That's like what a dog whistle is. And
that's awesome.
That's like the one criticism that I read about the McLaren thing is they're like, oh, this is going to be really awful for pets. You know, obviously there's not very many McLarens out there, so you don't have to, it's not going to be too big of a deal, but for the general fleet, probably have to do a much higher killer. It's just to kind of get away from that.
Another side note here, just for the fun of it. Reading one of my landlord books, cause I read those for fun, cause I'm weird. They were like,
we're programming books, so I can't judge.
Yeah. They were talking about how do you find out if people have pets if you have a no pet policy? Because this might come as a shock, but people lie. And I know. And they'll say, oh, no, we don't have a dog. And so they're literally like, their advice in the book is like, buy a dog whistle and just walk around your complex blowing it.
That's awesome. That's fun.
Like, the dogs will tell you. And yeah, I'm just like, oh, that's horrible.
But clever.
Yeah. Side note. There you go. The lesson here is don't lie to your landlord.
Yeah,
They've got ways.
They read books.
They're reading the same book I am because it's like the number one landlording book, the Bible landlording book, apparently. Anyways,
so where McLaren has come up with new technology, we're going to take a quick look back at technology. Specifically, console prices, their launch price, but with a twist, and aka the only way you should ever look at launch prices, adjusted for inflation. These guys went through and they actually they listed all the different consoles by generation or thereabouts. They grouped them best as they could by year, and then adjusted for inflation the price. So they start out with the Atari 2600. So you're like, your first video game system. It's priced in today's dollars, $796, about $800.
That's reasonable.
You know, we buy iPads. It's not crazy. Of course, you could
look at that Panasonic. That's got like a TV thing or a DVD or what is that?
Which one?
Where am I? Oh, geez. I don't know. Oh, the 3DO right next to the Super NES. It looks like it takes a VHS player in it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Didn't mean to derail you.
Oh, man.
So what we're looking at is this big picture of a whole bunch of consoles next to each other, right?
Yeah. So the average price, like in the 80s, there was a couple of $800 systems, late 70s, early 80s, mid 80s, my birth year, the Master System. Nobody's even heard of that, so I don't know if it counts. But those are like 400-ish bones. The NES, adjusted for inflation, for our first video game system, $412.
The original price was $200.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is important. Original price was $200. Adjusted for inflation is $412.
Yes. The Sega Genesis.
Which, by the way, I was at this another side note, Sunday night, why not? We were hanging out with some youth group folks, and we were asking what's like one of the most memorable Christmas presents you've ever gotten.
Oh, no.
I might have mentioned the NES.
That memorable Christmas gift? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure there was a more memorable one for me. That's not true.
That's the gift that keeps on giving.
But
honestly,
it's definitely a it's a top five without question. Probably top three. That's a big one.
I might put up there the Ghostbuster Firehouse that we got our dad for Christmas.
See, I don't. Yeah, that's right. I don't remember.
And
that
I believe
one
I also
well.
Bought him that NES football game for Christmas.
Oh yeah, that was the best Christmas present.
Yeah.
So
thanks, Dad, for letting us play.
Yeah, he was kind.
I don't think he ever.
So the Genesis. I don't think so either. So the Sega Genesis came out in 1989, a mere 3 years after the NES, for a whopping $346, or an initial price of $190. I think the NES might have come down in price by then. The Neo Geo, which I only barely remember even existing, that came in at a whopping, adjusted for inflation, $1,100, $1,125. I think it takes the cake as the most expensive. Yes, it does. The original Super NES, $200 in 1991, or $332 adjusted for inflation. The 3DO, the Panasonic with the VCR player, that nobody bought, that one just over $1,000. The PlayStation, the original PlayStation, came out 446 bones, or $300.
1995.
The Sega Saturn that nobody bought, $595. The Nintendo 64 that everybody bought was I didn't buy one.
You're right.
It came out.
We played that game.
It
where
came out at
I bought the system, and you bought the games.
Yeah, which probably was because you ended up paying more. If it was $200 and I bought the first two games, I probably bought like $120 worth of games. I'm 3 years younger than you. And you bought the system, and then you took it with you to college and all of my games.
You're welcome.
But it cost $289.
GoldenEye is still amazing, just for the record.
I believe it. So the launch prices on your Nintendos are starting to come down a little bit. Your Dreamcast, which
they're $200 across the board. What are you talking about?
They started out at $412. I mean, generation to generation, your Nintendos are coming.
Oh, adjusted for inflation. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
The Dreamcast $272.
They keep their sticker price the same.
Exactly. PlayStation 2 was $395. Also saw a minor price drop adjusted for inflation, or $300. Mm-hmm. They kept the same sticker price. The Xbox 360 kept the same sticker price as the PlayStation 2. The PlayStation 3 was the first one to make a big jump in sticker price, 500 bones, as many of us remember. Whereas the GameCube kept the sticker price, $200 for an adjusted $259. And now we're coming into the Wii U territory. Now this is when Nintendo started to escalate their sticker price. So it went from $250 to $300. PlayStation 4s, they brought theirs down to $400. The Xbox One brought theirs up to $500, adjusted for inflation, $500. Interesting. It's interesting because what I think is fascinating about it is there's this, like, I feel like there's this pain crunch that everybody's complaining about the fact that, you know, consoles are getting more expensive. And if you look at the sticker price, yeah, it definitely feels that way. Your Wii is
totally.
Especially in Nintendo, it's like it had always been $200. It had been kind of become the expectation. That's what my 3DS cost, and you're like, come on, guys. But the reality of it is, when you actually adjust it for inflation, it's not too painful. The Wii U cost $300 adjusted for inflation. The Super NES cost $332 adjusted for inflation.
Well,
you wouldn't complain about that in '91.
I look at that, and I go, no. Prices did actually go up. Because if you remember when the PS3 came out and everyone was like, $500? That's ridiculous. You're like, yeah, it was ridiculous. And proof of it is they figured out how to lower the cost of their console.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, which means, you know, if the Xbox comes out at $500, you're like, yeah, it's still ridiculous. You know, even though, yeah, the PlayStation 3 had a high number. They're high. When you look at...
I'm saying
you go back to 96, it's 200, 200, 300, 200, 300, 300.
But
there's the 1, 500, then 250, 300.
But the pain of that $200 was equivalent, is what I think I'm getting, the point I'm getting at. Yeah, it was $200 your sticker price for your Super NES, but it hurt like it were $412, just like you're buying a PlayStation 4 today. You know, adjusted for inflation, how much of your wealth it took from you to purchase one of these is equivalent. How many baskets of bread and other, you know, and milk and other, whatever, you know, measures they use for adjusting for inflation, mm-hmm. you know, it was the equivalent amounts. I think that's the point, is that that's the pain of buying a new system has actually stayed, well, it's varied wildly, but for your, like, real mainstay systems, your most popular systems, they stay relatively consistent. In the ballpark of between $300 and $400. And the systems that got above that, not
which means the Xbox One is still very expensive.
Too expensive. Yeah, that's the one big takeaway I have. And I think you're seeing that in the
sticker
price.
Just like the PS3 was too expensive, and
exactly.
They had to lower it significantly.
Exactly. I completely agree with that. I think $500 is your upper limit, and you know, obviously $259.
I think $400 is your upper limit, honestly.
That's what I meant. $400, yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry.
Okay.
$400 is your upper limit, and I think if you get much below $300, you actually start to see people don't buy it because you're not. It's for whatever reason that like magic area between $300
and $400. Well, that's where the cost of goods starts to become an issue. You're right. You just can't have that kind of the performance that people want for high definition video and other stuff with $300 parts.
Right.
You unfortunately got to spend $400, but you can't spend $500 if you do.
And I think that is the explanation for why the iPads are selling better than Android tablets, because it kind of lands in that magic area of, you know, you're paying enough for components to get the best components, but the cheapest iPad is not so expensive that it's essentially adults' versions of buying a video game system, which is funny because all of my adult friends are buying video game systems.
Well, I mean, and the other thing you got to think about too, right? And I don't know how many people do this kind of math, but you buy a video game system. Well, I don't want to think about it. You know, you buy an iPad, and you know, let's say you get a good one, right? You're spending $700 for it. You know, $300 or more than a PS4.
Yeah.
And you go out and you get all the apps you want, and you've spent what?
$800. Yeah. I mean, you get
$100, maybe.
Yeah. Over the lifetime of the device, an extra $100 tops.
Right. I mean, you buy two games.
Yeah.
For either the PlayStation or the Xbox, and you're already spent more.
Yeah.
And you know, and so it's like, yeah, over the lifetime of that thing, the console honestly isn't the expensive part.
No,
if
not.
You're, you know, it's as bad as cell phone plans. Yeah. Yeah, the hardware is the cheap part. And you know, and so that's one of those where it's, I think that's where people start to cry foul, or at least that's where I start to have the heartache, right? It's like $60 for a game?
You know, it's funny. I mean, talk about what's that marketing tool, grounding, anchoring? I think it's anchoring.
Yeah,
where you set people's expectations and then you slowly pull them along. That part of my justification logical, I know this was part of my justification. I never said it out loud, but I know it was in the back of my head, was that with the 3DS was that the games are less expensive. They're only like $35, you know?
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous because it's still $35 for a game. But, you know, I was like, but because it's like, well, it's almost half the price of a PlayStation or a Xbox game. I mean, that's a good deal, man. I can afford that. You know? It's craziness. But I was glad to see that because numbers adjusted for inflation I don't understand why we ever talk about numbers that aren't adjusted for inflation. It's just so important to really understand context. So I'm glad somebody went through and did that for us.
It's also important to make sure you get the right inflation numbers. I'll be honest, these numbers seem a little high to me, but
okay.
Yeah. That's that's just me. They don't actually say what they.
You're like an economist, so.
I know. I think about that stuff, but it's okay. So, cool, man. That's cool.
That's cool.
Thanks for sharing. So does this mean now you're ready to go out and get a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One? Because, you know, prices are reasonable. Maybe a Wii U.
Nope. But, do you want to talk about your big story or you want me to go first?
Well, mine's like 4.
And mine kind of feeds into this. So we'll just jump onto mine. So I'm going to stick on the video game thing because I think this is fascinating because this is what I probably will buy. What?
Video game thing?
That's not the right. That is not. Oh, no. I hate it when I do this. I hate it when I do this. Give me one second. I know exactly where it is. I'll find
it. You're not talking about Cornell 3D prints?
No.
I'm sticking on a video game thing. I was like, really? How does this feed into it? But okay.
Yeah, let me.
You got this, man.
Let's try this again. So the 3D printing is really cool, but that's not what I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about my next video game system that I'm going to buy, Oculus Rift, and kind of what they're doing.
Yeah.
So definitely, like, right now their big collaboration is with Steam. Valve. They're helping them do, you know, they're helping them with the technical side of what they're trying to do that they can't do in-house. This all kind of ties together because I've already talked about the idea that I want to get a Steam machine. And if I can get it with an Oculus Rift, that'd be amazing. What I'm hoping is probably mid-2004, Steam Machine software is going to come out. Somebody's going to come out with a box that's got all the graphics card, everything you need to be able to run the Oculus Rift, like, amazingly. And then I could just have that and spend all my money on things I don't need. But the cool part about this is kind of what's going on over at Oculus Rift. So, which is fascinating because it's like, you know, VR has – everybody's been wanting something like this forever, but they've not really been able to do it. And there's this big question, if you don't understand why, you know, why does it always sound like a really good idea? You know, it's always been part of pulp culture, but nobody's ever had a product that really, you know, made the cut. The reason why that is true is the very wall that Oculus Rift is running up against, and it's kind of an interesting idea. So have you ever heard of the Uncanny Valley?
No.
So the Uncanny Valley is this idea. If you search the Google for it, the first hit is a Wikipedia page that talks about this. But it's this idea in computer-generated realities or fake stuff, really and truly. And it's not just computer-generated, but it's in a couple of different – it's in – okay, so this is the example I gave. You go to Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, right? You go in, and everything looks really weird, right? Why does it look really weird?
Right.
It's because there's this weird thing that happens in human psychology.
Because they're made of wax.
Well, yeah. There's this weird thing that happens in human psychology. When you see something that's supposed to – that's designed to be lifelike, and it's really close to lifelike, but it's not lifelike, it's not quite there – The small variations that make it unlifelike become exaggerated to feel even worse. They make us very, very, very uncomfortable. And this is the Uncanny Valley.
That.
Yeah, and so it's the idea. It's like it's why is it that, you know, computer? Why is it that everybody hates the graphics of the new Hobbits? Not hates, but they're displeased with them compared to the original Lord of the Rings. Well, one of the big reasons is because in the original Lord of the Rings, they actually used, like, actual actors in makeup and miniatures for all of these different sets and stuff, and then just did small digital additions, whereas in the new Hobbits, they're doing – everything's digital. And so the Uncanny Valley, instead of taking – real-life things and adjusting them slightly, they're completely remaking stuff. And so the Uncanny Valley is bigger there, and it's deeper, and it's more uncomfortable. And what they actually say is it's that Uncanny Valley. It is the actual knowledge that when you put the headset on, that there's something that goes on in the back of your brain when you can sense that you're not really there. That is what makes everybody, when people get oozy after like 20 minutes of using a system, that is as a result of this disconnect of something that's incredibly immersive, but not completely immersive. And that little discrepancy that's created is what makes people want to throw up. It makes them nauseous. And it is believed through a couple of different tests they've run this through, that what actually creates the uncanny valley in VR is not like the fact that it's, you know, video game graphics and stuff. What it is it's latency, or the lag between when your head moves and what they call
okay, I can see that.
Yeah, it's motion to photons latency. Basically, the time between your head moves and the frames of the video game catch up. And there's a couple of things that when you do this, a couple of things happen. User input A is the first thing that happens, so your head moves. A USB cable delivers that command from the Rift to the computer. The game engine translates that command for the graphics processor unit, or the GPU. The processing issues a write command for a new image, so basically it generates all the polygons, and then it turns it into, these are the pixels that you have to do. The Rift's display switches pixels to the display, the new image. The new image appears in full. And this is measured, that time is measured in milliseconds. And over the course of the life of this field, they've had a couple of different beliefs about how short the latency has to be in order to get out of the uncanny valley, as it's called. So early on, a lot of companies said it was like 100 milliseconds. If you could get less than 100 milliseconds from motion to images, you'd do it. Later efforts said it was a 40 milliseconds. And what's really interesting is it's all these companies that were like, it's 100 milliseconds, and guess what? Ours can do 98. Or it's 40 milliseconds, and ours can do 37. You know, it's one of those classic, you know, moments. Well, the Oculus team has come through, and they said, we honestly believe that it's 20 milliseconds. And they can right now get down to about 25. And they think, using a couple of different cool little technologies, they can get it down to 15 for a consumer-grade product. Yeah, which is really fast. and there's a couple of things that they're going to need to be able to do that. Or there's a couple of hurdles that they're running into. Right now, one of the big ones, they said the user input's pretty fast. They can make that faster, but at most they're going to shave off a millisecond and a half. They're not going to make much distance there. The USB cables, it is what it is. Those things have, you can push it right up to the edge of its baud rate, but they've already got it as fast as they can get it, and there's just a certain amount of time, there's a certain amount of latency that's developed there. You just accept it, it happens. The GPU, now this is the interesting part, because that is a function of two things: the power of your GPU, so how good of a graphics card do you have, and how well is your game written? And that is one of the big deals about them taking on, just in May, John Carmack, who, as a co-founder of id Software and the man behind games like Doom and Wolfenstein 3D, he's the one who joined just really, really recently. He's like a super big deal in the video games field, and he's come on to help Oculus Rift and video game companies kind of bridge the gap to get that latency down. And what they basically are saying is that video games right now are at about 60 frames per second, which equals an equivalent latency of like 16 and a half milliseconds, which is a lot if you're trying to get under 20. And what they're basically saying is if you could get up to like 120 frames per second, or the equivalent of the new Hobbit movies, you could actually, like, you know, cut that latency in half. So that's going to be a big deal, is about getting your frame rates up a lot. And then And then the other big real place where they lose a lot of time is in LCDs. The LCDs doing different stuff can take anywhere between 2 to 30 milliseconds. And they've got a couple of different cool ways that they can shorten that with how everything is, you know, the sequence in which things are done and the timing of it. But there's still a lot of time lost there. And so what they're saying is OLED though, pretty much across the board is like 1 to 2 milliseconds for pixel switching. So nice. That's probably the route that they'll go, and that'll help tremendously. And so their problem is that the OLEDs that they want are made by one company, and they've never sold them to third party. So it's kind of a big deal that they're able to get to the point where they want to do what they are trying to do. But the point in all of this is that there's no hurdle where they're waiting on some, you know, we can do this as long as we get this technology that doesn't exist yet and is only hypothetical. They're basically at this point, there's no technology out there that's saying they can't do this. This is just pure engineering in that we know it's possible. We just have to stitch all the right pieces together, and then we can sell it. And what's really cool about this is that all the pieces of technology they're talking about putting together still is not going to make this thing cost crazy amounts. It'll be affordable in the, you know, less than $300 price range is kind of what they're aiming for right now. So like $250. But you combine that with like a Steam machine. Oh man, that's so awesome.
Cool.
And what's really, yeah. And what's cool here is that it sounds like they've really gotten to the point where, you know, this is not science fiction anymore. 2014 might be the year of virtual reality. The 2014 might be to virtual reality what 2007 was to smartphones, where it's like, whoa, this is how it's supposed to be done. And what's crazy about it is it's going to be almost for the same reason. The iPhone was the first touchscreen where latency and input were sorted. The Apple engineered a process that allowed them to do it in a way that, you know, everything responded very snappy. All the graphics worked the way that they were supposed to, and there wasn't so much of a lag that it felt very natural. And then you could actually touch and aim and stuff, and it was sensitive enough. And so those are your two big hurdles that they basically put those together and then gave you the UI, and, you know, it worked. Whereas like with the Oculus Rift, it's pretty much the same issue, latency. How do we make it feel natural when people use it? Where Apple did everything behind closed doors, Oculus Rift is doing it rather openly. And I think the result is going to be a lot of people are going to buy these things when it comes out. Game developers are going to love it, and they're going to develop games for it. And Microsoft and Sony are going to be like, we need to do that. And I mean now. and I think you'll really see it take off. And what'll be really fun about it, and I'm hoping this happens too, is that it makes sense for like watching movies and stuff. So that, you know, obviously you can't like, you know, move your head and have like it go around. But we'll just like pipe 3D movies into it. So if you want to watch, you know, like a surround sound, you know, in your face version of Avatar. Cool. You just like can lay on your bed with your Oculus Rift on your head and watch Avatar. Freaking awesome. Can't wait. I'm excited.
Seems like underutilizing it a little bit.
Well, I mean, you know, it's cheaper than a 3D TV.
Is it? Have they talked about price yet?
The dev units are like $180-190.
Oh, that's reasonable.
yeah. So 250 is kind of what everybody thinks they're going to target for a mass market thing. And they've just raised a ton of money for tooling up to
cool,
you know, manufacture them. So this is a big thing. I mean, this is coming, and it's going to be awesome. And the future is here. And so, oh, I'm pretty excited about it. I'm excited about the video games. I'm next year for me is definitely going to be I'm feeling the video game industry, coming up with some new clever innovations and some stuff to shake it all up. You know, I'm hoping that 2014 is a, I'm not supposed to be predicting yet, but I'm excited. All right. That's kind of where my eye is. The eye of Sauron or Matthew is has turned its gaze on the video game industry.
Dude, that'd be cool. I hope you get one, and then I'm gonna come visit you and play with it. And it would be good.
I don't blame you, and then you'll get one.
Well, if it's that cheap, I might consider it.
Yeah.
I'd have to get a television. No, I wouldn't have to get a television.
See, that's the best part. You don't have to get a television. It is a television. You put a little camera on that thing, heads-up display, boom, we're done.
It'd be pretty cool if you could do two-player stuff.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's basically a mouse input and a screen output. I mean, it's designed to work with modern games, so there's no reason to think that you couldn't do that online, you know, and, you know, play somebody online, Call of Duty, and or whatnot.
Well, I'm not saying, I mean, you're in the same room together, co-op type stuff.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. It's funny, I just think it would be fun to, like, you know, I just love 3D. I don't know why. I get so excited about it. But it's like, I would think it would just be fun to, like, build SimCity so that you, like, are playing SimCity with, you know, your Oculus Rift on and just, like, sitting at your desk, like, in the cities in 3D or, you know, whatever. I don't even need to – 3D brings absolutely no additional gameplay to Pokemon, but I love it. I think it's awesome. I use it all the time. The rest of my friends are like, why would you do that? It's a waste of battery. I'm like, because it's great. It's awesome, man. The Pokeball flies through time. I don't know. Through space, I mean, not time. But I'm excited.
I can tell. That's awesome. There were some other predictions for what would happen in 2014. But before we get to that, Mr. Walt Mossberg decided to take a look backwards.
Why?
And I believe you actually.
Because he's retiring. Yeah.
No, he's not retiring. He's starting his own company.
Oh. He's retiring from the Wall Street Journal.
He's quitting. He's defecting.
Yeah.
So what were his tops?
So the top products in the two decades of tech review. So this is interesting. So he starts out with the – do we want to count down? We'll count down. We'll do it backwards of what he said. So 2010, okay. Number 12 was the 10-inch tablet, a.k.a. Apple's the iPad. Owens was a big deal. Kind of spurred on the new generation tablets, and was pretty cool, pretty fun to use, kind of a big deal. Number 11, 2008, the MacBook Air, as sort of your ultralight PCs go, was a big deal. And actually what's interesting about that one was like the first MacBook Air, which was crazy, crazy expensive. And then they like halved the price of the next generation, and they basically became their low end. They went from their ultra high end PCs to their ultra low end PCs, which are computers. 2008, same year, Android, just as a product. This was directly post the introduction of number 9, the Apple iPhone. So this was Google's big response to the iPhone. And actually, there was a great article this week about basically what happened in Mountain View the day that the iPhone was announced. They were talking about the guy who was like one of their top product devs, and he was on his way to Vegas in a limo, and they're like on their way because they're gonna go talk to manufacturers as they like sit down and like figure out how to build the phones that they need to build, and they're watching the keynote live, and the guy was like, we need to pull over. They're like, why? He goes, because we need to stop watching. We need to finish watching this before we go and talk to these guys, because I think this changes everything, which is awesome. It's really cool in that, like, they were astounded. I mean, it's funny, we've heard talks about what happened in Waterloo with BlackBerry. Yeah. When the iPhone came out, where they're like, it's not true. What they said is not true. It's just not possible. When we get the device, we'll figure out how far it, you know, falls short of what they're claiming it can do, and then we'll go from there. And then they got it, and it could do everything that Steve Jobs said they could do. And they were like, you know, they were flabbergasted. Well, Android had been really, like, you know, it's funny, they had all these cool innovations like the App Store and a couple other, you know, a couple of the really cool product features that the iPhone wouldn't really have for a couple of years. All these different innovations, but the interface, the UI, was so radically different, because as far as Google was concerned, the interface everybody wanted to use was a QWERTY keyboard. It was basically a BlackBerry knockoff with the cool software innovations that, you know, Android kind of allowed to happen, third-party apps and stuff like that. And so they basically had to keep the foundation ideas of what they were doing, which is what Walt is, you know, talking about, and then build the new UI that copied the iPhone. So at number 8 in 2006 was Twitter. This is often seen as Facebook.
Again, he's just going in chronological order, right? This isn't in order of, like, the best of the best, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, look at that. You're right. I didn't even notice that. I thought he was going in best of the best.
Which is fine. Yeah.
And that's important because that comes right behind 2004's The Facebook was the other
product. Both of those, big deal.
Big
totally
deal.
Agree.
2001, there was a Space Odyssey that year, and Apple's the iPod.
I own one of those.
Yeah, which is me too.
So did apparently everybody else.
yeah, which is why it was a big deal. It's funny, I didn't own one until the iPhone came out.
I remember I asked for one as a graduation present. It was sweet.
I didn't know that. I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. I know what I got you for your graduation present, though. Do you remember? I got you GameCube games because you were taking my N64 games. and I was keeping the GameCube. So in 1998, there was a little web startup that allowed you to look through their index of crawled web pages, a.k.a. the Google.
Yeah, well, they figured out how to algorithmically index web pages.
Yeah, as opposed to...
And they tried to sell that algorithm to Yahoo, and Yahoo was like, no, we like hiring people to do it manually. Yeah. So
this
we're not going to buy you. And they went, fine, we'll start up our own little company.
Yeah, our own.
There's no way a computer could replace a human for that.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
It's one of those things where, like, in retrospect, you just sit there and you go, I don't even know. I've done stupid things. I've done ridiculously stupid things in my life where, in retrospect, you just sit there and you go, how did I not see that coming? I just hope that they never live up to that sort of... You know what the funny part is? Is they were probably right at that moment. They probably were right. They probably were thinking that, you know, apples to apples, our results are better. Why would we switch? You know, not at all seeing, you know, what would happen in 3 years. Windows 95 came out, and guess when? 95.
Wait, you skipped one.
Palm Pilot number 4 came out in 1997. This was your precursors to your iPhones. You take an iPod, you put it into a Palm, and then you add the internet. Boom, you got the iPhone. That was a big deal. Before that, Windows 95, the best of the Windows. Actually, that was a big deal.
Well, it's kind of all downhill from there, huh?
Actually, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's 95 has this nostalgia about it because it was like the first of the, wow, this is incredibly awesome. You know, XP and 7 were pretty cool operating systems too. I mean, they had a lot going for them.
True.
Still do. Except they're going to stop supporting XP pretty soon here. Okay, in 1994, the Netscape Navigator, which is actually kind of a
cool thing about
what it did and what it meant. It was the first successful consumer web browser. It was later crushed by Microsoft's Internet Explorer because they cheated. But it made the web a reality for millions, and an influence has been incalculable. Every time you go to a web page, you are seeing a legacy of a Netscape in action. And then, number one... This was the thing that set the hardware world ablaze. Everybody went out and bought one, and by everybody, I mean basically nobody, but it was still a really big deal. The handheld computer from Apple, a.k.a. Newton's Message Pad. It was a failure, even a joke, mainly because the company promised it could flawlessly recognize handwriting. It didn't, but it had one feature that foreshadowed some of today's most cutting-edge technology, an early form of artificial intelligence. You could scrawl "Lunch with Linda Jones" on Thursday, and it would create a calendar entry for the right time and the right person, which is sort of like saying, okay, Google, will you have Siri do this for me now? And basically was the what was all about. So pretty cool little list of products.
Yeah. I would agree. As far as I know, you know, I don't see any of these on here where I'm like, why did that make the list? So
you might be able to think of a few. Cool. I mean, one of the things he apologizes early on for Apple, but it's funny. I think Apple gets credit for the iconic pieces of hardware where it's like, you know, it's just such an easy go-to because they're so dang recognizable as the first of the tablets, the first big deal in smartphones, the first, you know, it may not be the biggest, and it may not even be the most influential in reality, or the, you know, the top-selling or the best piece of hardware.
Well, I don't know. You just, look at the, you think about the, I don't know, you think at, like, Windows 95. Who was Windows influenced by?
Yeah, that's,
you think about the Palm Pilot.
So I grabbed that article from Mac Daily News, and
pretty funny.
And their list, they highlighted, it was Apple products were bold. Products inspired by Apple products were italicized. So like Windows 95 being a ripoff of a Mac operating system. And then just the regular plain text.
When you got the Palm Pilot from the Newton, and then Android from the iPhone.
Yeah, and so, you know, basically it was Twitter, Google, and Facebook were the only three that they gave anybody else credit for other than Apple. Which, I mean, that's their thing. That's what they're supposed to
do. You know, they give it to Netscape. Netscape.
Oh, that's true. That was.
So I just sit there and, you know, but yeah, you can apologize for them if you want, but they did, you know, legitimately creative things.
Yeah.
They haven't since he's left, but
don't worry.
A different story altogether.
This is the year.
This is the year. Yeah, we'll talk about it. There was other stuff that happened in 2013.
What?
Let me see if I can remember this article now. So Nielsen. Oh yeah, yeah. These were the top web brands for 2013. You know, good to know stuff. Sorry, I gotta type.
Wait on me.
I always put Nielsen with an O instead of an E at the end there. So I bet you can guess number one.
On the web.
Yep. Number one web prop.
I already opened the article.
Oh, okay. It is Google. But they are down 6%.
Oh, man, they are down.
Number two is Facebook, which is down significantly. Not a total surprise. Yahoo is still kicking around at number three.
Wow.
Not bad. And then others.
Microsoft.
In terms of video brands... so there's number one is, surprise, YouTube with 128 million unique viewers.
That's a lot of unique viewers.
Is actually number two at 37 million.
That's unbelievable. And the gulf there is crazy. Google and Facebook are only off by like 30 million users. But
yeah,
it's funny. As much as YouTube is getting like people angry about their different policy shifts, that's insane.
The ads are starting to get a little annoying to me. I think there's an opportunity there, but
yeah. Well, and I gotta think about this really quick. Okay, wait a second. This is going to be really telling of how big YouTube really is. So they lost 128.6%.
Which I'm still trying to figure out. They've got numbers here, and so it talks about the top web brands, and it has YouTube at number 5 at 119 million, and then they have them at 120, and there's something about the difference between average unique audience and average unique viewers or something. Those numbers are not exactly the same, and that bugs me.
Yeah,
because I feel like they should be. And then they have year-over-year growth for YouTube on the for the top one is negative 14, and then for the other one they have it as negative 6. And I'm just like, that hurts. Other than the only thing I could think of is that if, let's see here, quick math, they've got a smartphone thing here, and YouTube is 71 million. So if you do 71 plus, yeah, see, that doesn't.
I wonder if unique viewers are people who have watched. Head. This is what I think it is. Unique viewers are people who have watched a YouTube video in an embedded in a website versus people who have gone to YouTube. So most people who have watched an embedded video, you know, about 120 million of them have also gone to the website. But there's 20 or so million, or actually it looks like about 10 million, 8 million, whatever, who have never actually gone to YouTube, have only watched videos on, you know, embedded videos. All right. Would be my guess.
I guess. All right. And then they also have – all right, I'll believe it. I still feel like with only a difference of 8, having one at negative 6 and one at negative 14 is a little extreme when you're talking about that small of a delta. But that's just me, again – calling into question people's math, which I am allowed to do because I am a professional mathematician.
Nice.
Okay, so top smartphone apps of 2013. Number one is the Book of Face. Number two is Google Search. I don't know how that works. Obviously, I guess Android's really big, right? And so,
yeah, Android is huge.
Because I guess Google Play is number three, so that makes sense. Mm-hmm. YouTube's number four. Google Maps is number five. Gmail is number six.
I'm surprised that YouTube is not bigger than Google Play. I guess it's not shocking. But you'd think YouTube would be like Facebook, where it's a cross-platform, you know, every Android, every Facebook, or every iPhone has some version of YouTube, basically. You'd think it would – I can understand why it might be smaller than Google Search, less used than Google Search, just because Google Search is so dang used. But I'm just surprised that Google Play is actually that big. But I guess not. And then Apple Maps barely made – the only Apple – dedicated app was Apple Maps at number 8. And it grew like gangbusters, 64% growth, which is not shocking considering the fact that it was only existed for part of 2012.
But the other one that's kind of fun to do, nah, let's not do this one. The other looking back one is Google finally did their year-end zeitgeist.
Oh, baby.
They did. They've got a fun little video that's a minute and a half long that, you know, gives the year in review, essentially. So their top 10 global trending searches, these are all of them. Number one is Nelson Mandela, which I feel like just happened recently. I'm trying to figure out – how is it possible that, like, and number two is Paul Walker. How is it possible that these two are number one and number two when I feel like those events are really recent and they're, you know, and they're competing against other searches that have had a lot more time? But,
well, I don't know.
I feel like they're not just doing number of searches, they're doing something else, you know?
Trending searches of 2013?
It's the way that they word it, that trending searches, you're like, that can't just be, these were the top searches of the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel that, like, that's the game that they're playing some sort of game with us. Again, questioning numbers and...
Okay, who's Corey Mont? Who's Corey Mont? Corey? Oh, he's the dude from Glee. Man, you want to become a big deal on Google? Die. That's the trick. Or be born, evidently. The royal baby. Or be a phone. Actually, that's another good trick. Galaxy S4.
Oh, so trending. Okay, so here's what it is, and here's is why these get on there. Trending is they're the top searches with the largest increase in search volume since the previous period. That's why those rank high.
Well,
interesting. So they aren't necessarily the top searches; they're the biggest increases. That's kind of dumb. So the iPhone 5S. Corey, Harlem Shake, Boston Marathon, except, Royal Baby, Samsung Galaxy S4, PlayStation 4, North Korea. So they're saying, again, trying to stick with their zeitgeist, is that these are things that were not important, and now they are.
Yeah, because you gotta filter out all of the, how do I spell definitely versus defiantly. I mean...
But it would be interesting to figure out, like...
What is the top searched?
Yeah, what is the top search? But...
That would actually be really interesting. Because I'm sure it'd be like, well, I don't know. This is the cynic in me speaking, but...
Tesla's number one car company. You feel good about that?
Of course.
Fortune 500. Cool. Apparently Google.
Cool.
Search basically. Topics with the largest... So they don't just do largest increase. Now, here's what's interesting.
Yeah.
Is when you click on business and politics, it does, like, car companies, does the largest increase. For female politicians, largest increase. For Fortune 500, search topic with the largest search volume. For some reason, they chose not to do largest increase. Oh, look who's number one, Google. Male politicians, largest increase. Stocks, largest increase, which, by the way, was Facebook. I sit there and it's like, that to me is like, that's weird. Why? It's okay because on some of them they have arrows, and on others it has bars, and that must mean it's different. I am not having any fun with the data.
Yeah, I was gonna say you were angsty today. You're just not having it.
For some reason. They also do it by cities, and it's completely boring because Paul Walker is number one in all but three. Weird. Entertainment. And then for some reason, where is he for that one? Celebrity breakups, famous internet cat memes, Grumpy Cat.
Grumpy Cat, yeah. He was pretty funny.
Little Bub, Tuna the Dog, Colonel Meow, Princess Monster Truck. Those were all up there. Let's see, top memes. Zerg Rush. Do you know what that one is?
Yeah, dude. It's a reference to StarCraft.
Oh. Cinnamon Challenge. That's a new meme. Slender Man.
Have you ever seen the Cinnamon Challenge? That's pretty funny.
Oh, I have seen some videos. It's awesome. Let's see here. We've got movies, number one. Okay, so here we go. This is a different type of chart. It's not trend. It's search topics with the largest search volume. Okay, so the largest search volume, Man of Steel, Iron Man 3, World War Z was actually number three. Jobs was number four. Wow.
Yeah, that's not
The Conjuring, The Great Gatsby, Despicable Me 2, which was hilarious. The Purge, Pacific Rim, which you surprisingly liked, and then
what?
Voila.
That movie was great.
And then, let's see here. Social media sites. This is largest increase again. Tumblr, Facebook, LinkedIn. Google Plus is in there, number five. followed up by Goodreads, which is now owned by Amazon. Anything else of interest? Not really. I don't get there. Breaking Bad was kind of a big deal TV show, in case you didn't know that.
Yeah, it was. I still haven't watched the last season. I can't bring myself to do it. It's just too intense. I'm still working up the energy. It's crazy.
Wow. Let's see here. Top honeymoon locations. New Zealand.
This is important for me. It's not important for
me. Lock that one away. Cancun?
Yeah, I like Cancun.
That could work. Ooh, how about destination wedding locations?
Oh, Mexico. Man. You know what that is? You know what a destination wedding location is? That's how you tell your friends, I hate you. I don't like you having your money, so...
let's see here. MLB players with the highest search, Alex Rodriguez, is numero uno.
Of course. That's because...
Did the Boston Red Sox win something this year?
I don't know.
They must have. They're number one. I feel like they won. They must have won a championship or something.
The curse of the great Bambino.
Let's see here. Where's football at? NFL. Baltimore Ravens. Yeah, because they won. We won't talk about that. 49ers are number four, though, so that's good.
Oh, baby. Colin Kaepernick. I'm super excited.
Anyways, that's just me. Reading off what seems like random things.
Yeah. It's interesting to some degree, but 2013 was a weird year. I don't think there was like
a lot of tragedies.
Really busy, but no crazy standouts. You know, it's like I felt like 2012 had a lot of highlights, really easily identifiable highlights. Like, and you know, as you do the,
I can go back, and. Miley Cyrus had the highest search topic last year. This is last year.
Whoa, she was the highest last year?
Apparently.
Whoa.
I don't get her. Can I say that on the podcast? Can I do that?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand the attraction to her.
Like,
sure, she changed the way she looks, I guess, but she's not good looking. Is she? And I just totally miss it.
I
help me out here, Mr. Hipster. Help me out here.
I don't know. What's the deal?
Let's bash for a little bit here.
The general consensus that I have here is that Miss Miley Cyrus is, you know what the thing, okay, this is what it is. I hate to be this way because it's, you know, it's, I'll keep PG, but the long and short of it is that during high school, I knew, or like college, I knew a lot of guys that would like, there's a certain age where once you get above 18 until you're like 22, it's kind of cool to keep track of when the different Disney starlets are going to become, you know, 18 years old for whatever, you know, I mean, all the gross reasons that, you know, 18, 20-year-old guys would keep track of that. And
okay,
I think what happened was that, you know, Miley Cyrus was a pretty girl for a very long time, and she turned 18 and was still a pretty girl and was doing but was pretty normal and was still pretty conservative and reserved. And basically, you know, she realized that it was like, it was time to cash in. And so you get all crazy and you cut your hair and you get super skinny. And I think basically what happened was it's funny. I think the best way to take Miley is the cynical view of she's acting out a part, which is, you know, it's the young innocent girl who got all crazy. And so she went so far that I think for a lot of guys she screamed past the I'm attracted, but it's, you know, I'm attractive to you phase, and into the, you know, she's now got guys that, you know, okay, this is weird. This is weird for everybody. But the really into it guys. And I think, I think what's ended up happening is she's generated a tremendous amount of attention by becoming kind of weird, and her songs are still stupid catchy. Like, I cannot even have somebody mention that Wrecking Ball song without getting stuck in my head. And you combine those two things.
I probably have, but
probably. And you combine those two things, and you have a product that sells. And that's what she wanted to create, was a product that would sell. I mean, and to you know, highlight this even more.
Do you really think it's that calculated?
Well, this is where I come in, where I would give evidence to say yes, because what's her name, Lady Gaga, like the queen of shocking, who took the crown from Madonna, who was the queen of shocking before that, fired her PR person, her PR team, and hired Miley's. I mean, you know, if it's not calculating, why would Lady Gaga, who had a great team behind them, suddenly say, you guys aren't doing your job anymore. I want to go with Miley's team. Miley's is doing a better job. You know, and I sit there and I go, that's pretty calculating. And I think the concern is that I think there's a certain amount of truth behind Miley's. You know, it's a convenient excuse. She gets to do what she wants to do, which is be crazy, be shocking, and live a wild lifestyle, you know, and it's very, very easy for her marketing team to work with that. And so they're encouraging her to do that even more. And so at some point, if she gets far enough down that road of her, like, okay, we need you to hit the brakes because you're going a little too fast and it's not working anymore. We need to conservative it up a little bit, work on the image so we can sell a different type of product. And if she's like, yeah, but I like this lifestyle, then we're into Lindsay Lohan territory. And, you know, and it can
but
start
maybe
to
that's struggle. Part of the concern is she did go a little too far, too fast, and you do start to have those associations.
Right.
Instead of having it be a little more controlled, and you sit there and go, yeah, not super sustainable. But okay. Okay, you know, you had way too much of an opinion on that.
Sorry. You'd think I'd only think this way about tech, but I don't. I think about this about soda machines, okay? Like, don't get me started.
Okay, I won't, because I want to talk about tech instead.
There we go.
IBM does their annual, it's 5 in 5, which are 5 things that we think will be a big deal in 5 years.
This is a cool list. I've always thought this is a cool list.
Yeah, so they approach it a little bit differently. And so what they're saying generally is that in the future, everything will learn. So for like one of them is in the classroom, the classroom will learn you, which is something that we've kind of talked about where, you know, if you've got maybe it's not you're being totally taught by a computer, but if you're being, at least your education is being augmented by a computer, it can adjust and change to your needs. Where if it sees you struggling in a certain type of math question, it can go, hey, look, clearly you have figured out, you have forgotten how to carry your digits over when adding. Let's revisit that topic and teach you how to do it again. So they just say that a lot of that cognitive computing and learning technologies are really going to take off in the next 5 years. Another one is they say buying local will beat online. What? Don't tell Amazon.
Weird.
And they say that the reason is because technology is becoming cheap enough that local stores will be able to buy things to increase their engagement and personalization on top of your shopping experience. So ultimately they'll beat out Amazon and stuff because they'll be able to suggest good products, and they'll also be able to give you that instant gratification of physically shopping and buying something. Well, you know, again, being able to offer you a customized experience similar to what Amazon would do. They think in 5 years that doctors will routinely use your DNA to keep you well.
Oh, man, they feel like that's freaky.
Just starting to take off, and it's going to keep going, and DNA will play a bigger and bigger role. They think that, and this one's a little weird, that you will have a digital guardian to protect you online. So it says security is evolving from being based on rules like passwords to being automatic and made stronger through us just being us. This guardian, this thing, will have your back, trained to focus on people and items it is entrusted with a base on a 360 degree of an individual's data, devices, and applications. It will make inferences about what's normal or responsible activity and what's not, ready to spot deviations that could be persecutors to an attack and a stolen identity. So, or precursors.
I was going to say persecutors.
So, yeah, essentially better online security in the next 5 years. Which I'm like, nice. All right, fine, I guess. The city will help you live in it. And so, again, it's this idea of things around you learn. That's kind of this theme. And so you'll have fingertip access to information about what's happening in the city, whether it's right in front of you or how to get to something that's cool. And they will learn, you know, where you are, what you like to do, and that kind of stuff. And so they'll be able to present you with options that you might find appealing.
Like that.
Yeah, iBeacons could very much be an example of that. So that is what IBM sees, very briefly, as some big changes or some big themes in the next 5 years. Learning about you and who you are, the quantitative self, but also the quantitative it's not atmosphere. It's
environment.
Oh, there's a environment. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, quantitative environment. Yep. So that's what's coming down the pipe. That's what happened. That's what's coming. Keep that in mind for our show later on.
Interesting.
All right. Well. What are we gonna talk about now?
So somebody, I should have written that down. Let me open it up. Some university, they printed out a speaker.
Cornell.
Cornell, thank you. The Cornell Research created a whole thing using 3D printers. So this is kind of a big deal in that basically what they did was they used a number of different 3D printer technologies to print out each of the different components. And so they weren't able to do it in one shot, but that's not as big of a deal. Basically what they did was they created a speaker cone. And so you can plug it into a cone. It does not work well, but it does work. It's like, you know, it was a proof of concept. It was basically, yeah, we can do this, and which is cool because, you know, we've talked about a lot this year about the nature of 3D printing and how it's kind of moving forward. BTW went into the Microsoft store on Monday nights. I went into the Microsoft store this week. One of their big display things was a MakerBot 3D printer hooked up to a Surface tablet. Like, they're serious about that stuff, man. They want to be the OS of the 3D printer. And if Apple is not careful, Microsoft is going to make a good case for that. Hopefully Apple pivots quickly and realizes what's going on, because that could be a life raft for Microsoft that, you know, would be surprisingly large. So basically, they created a whole, the plastic shell and a conductive and magnetic pieces, which, by the way, they can print magnets. Did not know that. That's pretty cool. I guess it's some, like, ferromagnetic liquid where it's basically, you know, liquid magnets. And when it dries, if you dry it, I'm guessing you have to dry it in a magnetic field, it dries as a magnet, which is pretty awesome.
I have no idea what you just said there, but that's cool.
Do you know how they make magnets?
Oh.
So I'll give you the brief. So each, like, magnet, each iron molecule has a magnetic pole, a north and a south. But generally they all, like, are jumbled together. So the average, they're all kind of pointing towards each other or away from each other. So there's no total field. But if you could get them all to align, it would start to build up a bigger and bigger field. So what they do is they take iron, they put it into a melting, they put it into a crucible, they heat it up, and then they form it, and while it's forming, they put a giant electromagnet up against it, and that realigns all the molecules so that they're all kind of facing similar directions, and then as it cools, solidifies in that, and then boom, got a magnet. So cool. I'm assuming they did something like that with a a printable material that can do that. I don't know. They don't really get into it, but pretty cool. So that's exciting. It's the future, man.
No, the real future is context-aware messaging.
You're wrong, actually. That's not what's going to be the future. Dang it. Yeah? Okay, tell me about it.
There's a new startup that's called Context. Shocker. And have you ever had this problem where you want to send a Snapchat and you're trying to communicate some factual information where you're trying to communicate something important in a Snapchat, but you have the problem where the text box, you know, isn't very big. Uh-huh. So you wind up either like you scribble something on there or, you know, you just deal with it.
Right.
Have you ever had that where it's just like, you know, Snapchat is not a great communication tool.
It's not at all.
But yet, yeah, exactly. But some people try to use it like that and it just doesn't work. But sometimes it's nice to do something beyond just texting, you know, add something else to
Facebook Poke app.
Yeah. No, like, actually being able to, you know, the nice part about Snapchat is you have a picture and you can layer text on top of it.
Yeah.
And so being able to do that, but maybe not necessarily limiting the text to the level that they do.
That's what Poke does though, right? I thought that was one of the features of Poke.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Does it? Oh, okay. That product's dead.
Yeah, you and I use it for like a week.
We're moving on. Yeah, we're moving on from Poke. It doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. But Context does, where you type in your text, which has no limit except for what you can fit on your screen. Then you take your picture, and then you send it to whoever you want. And it's easy. And then they can also review it multiple times. It doesn't suddenly disappear on them, which I like because I'm older.
How is this not just a text app?
Because it's the picture layered on top of the text, or the text layered on top of the picture, other way around.
Oh, okay. So basically it's a photo editing app that automatically sends it as a chat.
Yeah, kind of.
Some of these ideas that take off, I don't know. I take off.
So let's take it a step back from this specific app, okay?
Yeah.
There is this underlying desire, and I think they got the name right, and their implementation is maybe a little weird, is to add some extra context to the message that you are sending to people. Okay, and so like here's another example of it. Kevin Rose, who is a tech dude, he started Dig, did a couple other stuff. Now he works for Google, helping them identify the next up and coming, business.
Top story.
With Google Ventures, yeah. He did this prototype, and he we'll link to the video, but I'm not gonna play it right now because that won't do you much good. It's called a tiny blog is what he's calling it. He comes up with names. But essentially what you do is you type your blog post into the computer.
There's exactly no pictures, what it
sounds like. No links, just text. And then what it will do is it will take a picture of you and kind of make it blurry and fuzzy and then have that be the background of the text. And so, again, it's the idea is to let the reader – learn more about the context in which you wrote that blog post. Where were you? What did you look like? What was your mindset? Well, you know, also just making it a little more artistic than just like, here's a picture of me sitting in front of my computer writing a blog post with no shirt on or something. That's not how I write. And
that's
just
how I
for
write.
The record. Yeah,
it's the only way. It has been a struggle for me to put on a shirt every time I have for this podcast.
Well, we all thank you for putting up with that struggle and overcoming it each week.
I can't say the same for pants.
That's fine. That's fine. It's these ideas of how do we add some context along with the message that is being sent. And so there's these different apps and ideas that are out there trying to solve that problem.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I just think that it's one of those things where it's like,
Do we need it?
Yeah. It's just an interesting. This is not much of an iteration over just texting with a picture. I mean, it's a cool way to do it, and I think what actually would be more valuable and is an app where you take a pic is an app that what it does is it is an editing app. It's designed to allow you to quickly put everything, and then you quickly just hit a button and it puts it into, you know, it accesses the text API and it shoots it over through text as a picture. That's like, but this is requires you to have friends that use the same app and all be connected on the same network it creates. So it doesn't take off very quickly.
Well, of course, that's what they want.
Right. They want to be a social networking thing. And the thing about Snapchat and the reason why Snapchat takes off and this goes back to the brilliance of their simple idea is it gave you some new thing that you couldn't do any other way. There was no API in any other apps that allowed you to delete somebody else's content and once they've viewed it. And that was what was so great about it. That's why it makes sense. That's why it exists. That's why it only, you know, it's stupid and playful, but it gave you something new and it found a context for that. This, I sit there and I go, I can do this with texting. And everybody that I'm and Facebook and Snapchat and everything else and, you know, all my other social networks where I already have these contexts, now I just need an app that allows me to type on it. And there are tons of editing apps, probably with more tools and you know, cool effects and features. It's an interesting idea, and that's an interesting way to look at it, the idea of, like, how do we bring different contexts together? But I'm just not sure I'm, you know, this particular
I think it would be cool.
Is.
All right, here's an app idea. I got one, okay? It's out there for free. If you make it, I will download it. Where I can send a text message to you, and then when I hit send, it tells me to smile, counts down to three, takes my picture, and then does the whole tiny blog thing where it just blurs it out, and then that's the backdrop for whatever it is I was writing. And then it sends it to you just like a regular text message. There's, you know, there is no words. It's just the picture. You tap on the picture, you read my text message, and then you can also see where I'm at. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be kind of cool.
And then maybe it adds a link to it, or, you know, maybe not a link, but a, you know, a watermark or something, like, you know, awesomeapp.com. Check it out. And, you know, I'd be all right with that unless I paid like a buck to get rid of it. But that'd be neat. I could see that. You know, make it super user-friendly. It works across all services, doesn't matter. And, yeah, just, like I said, adds a little context to what you wrote.
Yeah.
That would be neat. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah. Am I up next?
Your turn.
Facebook is going to become Yahoo.
Really?
Yeah, that's my prediction. I've been trying to figure out a way to articulate exactly what I think is going to happen to Facebook.
In what way?
Well, in that it's sort of this omnipresent service that tons and tons and tons of people use and still makes money, but nobody really thinks about. it's just there for most people, and it has uses, and I use it for weather and stock prices on my iPhone. And some people use it for all news. Some use it just for celebrity news. People use it for email communication. I don't think it won't be Yahoo in that it'll model itself off of how Yahoo works, but the nature of Yahoo, just sort of a utility that sits there kind of in the background and is a tool that a lot of people still use and just kind of hangs around because it's useful. I think Facebook is going to become sort of like that. And the reason for it is I think Yahoo is built on a bunch of engineers working together, and they would just sit there. And this goes back to, you know, why did Facebook make it and MySpace didn't? It's because MySpace was focused on their content, whereas Facebook was focused on the technology behind their content, which means any content that they find, they put that same engineering team behind it, and it'll be awesome. Basically, what this article that we linked to is arguing is that in its current form, Facebook can't survive because there's too much clutter, there's too much noise, and they've not figured out, and nobody's figured out, and Facebook has done a terrible job of distilling that noise and turning down playing with the different filters to get you what you want when you want it. But there is a solution already out there, and that is the solution of different apps for different services, whether it be Instagram or Snapchat or, you know, whatever. And they're basically saying that, you know, it doesn't have to be a repository for all your photos. There are other places that do that, some better, some worse, but there are different options for distilling your content to what you want, whether it's, you know, text. It's you go to Twitter, if it's pictures, you go to Instagram, if it's deletable stuff, you know, if it's the poke equivalent, it's Snapchat, and they just sit there and they shrug their shoulders and they're like, and because you kind of put all that together into one feed and news and everything, it just doesn't work. And it's fundamentally flawed in that way. And this article is actually titled it's a title designed to get clicks, and I clicked. Facebook is a fundamentally broken product that is collapsing under its own weight. And then the conclusion of the article, and it echoes exactly what I've been saying, Facebook isn't going anywhere. It's going to remain a pertinent force in our lives. And with mobile growing, Evan says Facebook will still be a winner. He just doesn't think it will be the only winner in the social mobile world, unlike in the desktop where it has monopoly on social. That said, Evan cautions, there's a bear case for Facebook. It turns into Yahoo. Billions of people use the product, and no one really thinks about it. Which he basically elegantly said what I've been saying in a lot more words for like the last year. And so now I'm going to start stealing it from him. And it's funny, they talk about this idea of the Zuckerberg law, where he said that, I would expect that next year people will share twice as much information as they shared this year, and the next year they will be sharing twice as much as they did the year before. Essentially saying there'll be a geometric or exponential growth of sharing, hoping that that would mean that Facebook would have exponential sharing. And what they found was that people do share twice as much as they did the year before, and that has been a trend that's continued. How long it can continue, who knows? The problem is that they're not sharing it on Facebook anymore. And they're sharing it, they're doing that, but through a bunch of different services. And we are by hand doing the what's the word? Curation of where different content needs to go, and the result is what we're seeing. I think it's
which I think we've stated this a while ago, which is Facebook could potentially run into a problem where everyone's hooked up to it and everyone's using it, but they're not actually visiting the site. Right. They are, you know, they're using it for account access to linking with friends on third party sites, and sure, they're sharing all the information back to Facebook, but no one's seen it.
If they go the ad mob route where they put ads...
Which is what we said, but they haven't yet, which is part of the concern. They could wait too long to pull that trigger, right? I guess they're still making money, so that's cool, but man, once you tip that scale, you might be in trouble.
Yeah.
They just need to pull that trigger sooner rather than later.
Yeah. They still have a tremendous amount of data on a lot of people, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's great, but if you don't have any eyeballs to show it to, what are you going to do with it?
It's true. It's funny. Every once in a while, I accidentally see ads on Facebook where, like, AdBlock will have to restart. I'm like, what are all these ads? Then I reload the page, and it goes away again. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's better. I've never understood ads on Facebook. Everybody complains about them. I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, that's right.
I guess they've, you know, they, I don't want to say it. You know, part of their problem is it's, you know, sure, they'll be able to show ads and it'll always work, but they've got expenses, and their expenses keep slowly growing every year, and it's the ad revenue has to slowly grow every year too.
Yeah.
It's when it stops doing that, that's when they're going to run into problems. But
yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. Well, there's not a clear case for victory for them, but
yeah,
I think
that I could see where they turn into Yahoo for sure.
Yeah. I guess what I like about that analogy is it's something it's succinct and people understand it. They understand what you're saying kind of on a gut level, even if you don't really understand, you know, because it's not a perfect analogy, but it's a good, like, catches your attention analogy. So everybody who sits there and bashes it, you say, just be like Yahoo. And they go, oh, yeah, I guess. Because after Google, everybody thought Yahoo was going to disappear and become nothing, and it hasn't, you know. And, I don't know, but, anyways. So, did you see the new
one of the most – yes, I have, which is surprisingly one of the most contentious ads out there.
I know.
It's kind of amazing. I was talking with fellow podcast guest David Perry
Podcast
and was, you know, trying to be like, what did you think about it? He goes, I hated it.
Really?
Oh yeah. And I was just like, why? And he's like, you know, it's this kid who's not engaged and they're glorifying that. And, you know, he goes off and I just sat there and went, you know, fine, you can disagree with it, but Apple got exactly what they wanted, which was everybody talking about it and wanting to watch it to see what they were talking about. And who cares if, you know, it doesn't necessarily sell a product. It got us all thinking about it, and I went, that's all they wanted, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, from a marketing perspective, it was brilliant. I got a little bit of a different perspective on it.
It's hard to get that kind of buzz. I mean, Samsung's so jealous. Like, what the heck, man? We put all sorts of ads, and we don't get this kind of attention.
It's funny. One of the things I notice about it, or
here's a question though: did you tear up? Did you cry a little bit?
So this is what's interesting. I got a little bit of a different perspective on it because of how I read news. I actually got the link to the video he created and watched that before I realized it was part of the ad.
Oh,
I was like,
weird.
Because somebody was like, it's titled like such and such family Christmas video. And like everybody was talking about it. I was like, oh, what is this? And I clicked and I was like, so this is just a family video that everybody likes? What the heck? I mean, it looks sweet and it's cool and it's, you know, it's got a good song to it and everything. I mean, like, it was a high quality family Christmas video, but big deal. And then like the next article that I read was, you know, the new Apple ad featuring this family video. I was like, oh, okay, let me click on it. So I knew what he was doing the whole time, and so it was a weird dissonance there.
So you didn't.
I already knew the punchline. Yeah, and because of that, I really enjoyed the commercial because to me it was just a, you know, it's like I had to figure out why this was controversial. He's just recording this family, you know, and looking kind of, you know. And he looks, and it's funny because of that. It was really obvious to me what they were doing, which was they were making him look as like a moody teenager.
Oh yeah,
I don't care at all, you know. And it was just like, it was one of those things where from a marketing perspective, it was brilliant because it did exactly what everybody wanted it to do. But it's like, it doesn't look real when you actually watch it in that context. Like, everybody I know who does that kind of video stuff, they're really into making the video of it, whereas he's, like, really into looking like a moody teenager, you know? And, like, I'm not paying
attention. Well, yeah, well, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, right?
Right.
They got to – if you're going to do the surprise, you got to make it not seem like it. But I read another article where they just went off on – you know, he's not engaged with the family. This is a commentary on society. And, you know, they're glorifying not being a part of it. And, of course, you know, it's funny. The biggest gripe that I heard that I actually agree with was they're training people to take video in portrait mode. And the final thing is in landscape. Totally faked. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? He's right. That does bug me.
That's amazing. You know what?
Yeah.
That, you know, now that you mention it, that bothers me too.
I know, like the shot where his dad throws a sock at him. It's totally, he's totally recorded in portrait.
Yeah, you know what I really wonder? You know what I really wonder? I wonder if they shot it with an iPhone. I don't think they did. I don't think they shoot that stuff. What?
No, I don't think they do. No.
Yeah.
They don't.
Which is kind of annoying to me, but I get why you. I mean, I get why you can't. It's, you know, it's like they did that with the.
Well, you could, right? Because there was that scene in Transformers where they shot it with an iPhone 4S because, like, we needed to get that handheld there, and the quality was good enough, so we.
Yeah,
did.
And it looks good. I mean, you could. 30 seconds. You could, but when you're doing like that high quality of a thing, and they want to be able to, you know, but
yeah,
but no, I don't know. It's an interesting commercial. It's cool. It's very cool, and I like the whole, you know, I like the Christmas vibe. I don't know. I'm kind of.
So what was also fun about this whole thing, and I linked to a couple of these articles because it was just so funny. It's so controversial because it's Apple, right? I mean, let's be honest, right? King of the Hill, they do something a little different. Surprise, surprise, a little interesting. You know, here come the dogs. We're going to yell at them. I mean, they even went as far as there's a new study out that said people who take pictures of art remember less about the works than those who don't.
Yeah.
Right? And this study just like wildfire through the internet. And people are like, oh my gosh, you know. And so here's Apple. Again, this kid's doing the wrong thing. He's not engaged with the family, and he's taking pictures and video, and so he's actually going to remember this thing less than before.
You know what's really interesting about that? Do you know why the article about the art, what they said was actually going on there? What they said wasn't that you were actually paying less attention to the art. They said that because you took the picture, your brain automatically decided that it doesn't need to keep the same quality of memory. It can disregard a lot of the details because what it needs to remember is the thumbnail and where to find the rest of the details, which is on your phone or on your camera. And basically, so what it was is it was saying that the reason you don't remember it as much is because you know where to find the rest of the details. And so it's not actually an argument for the idea that you quote-unquote remember less. It's that if you want to remember the rest, you just have to go back to your photos.
So what's interesting about this is there was actually a second half to this study that surprisingly never got mentioned by anybody because they're haters, which actually is going to contradict a little bit about what you said. But what it found was that there's actually three groups. There's not just two. There's the group that didn't take any pictures, and then the group that took a picture, and definitely the group that didn't. They said it did remember the art better. But then they said there was a third one, which was participants who zoomed in on a specific thing, didn't just do the entire picture or scene, but a specific thing. They go, their subsequent recognition and detail memory was not impaired. In fact, it was even slightly better for, you know, compared to ones who didn't at all. And so what they were saying was, they're like, look, what we're not saying is never take a picture. What we're saying is be purposeful about what you're taking a picture of. Say, I'm taking a picture of this specific thing, and it'll be fine. Just don't do the entire scene to capture it. So funny, man. Such a controversial. I mean, they totally named it right. Right? Just misunderstood. It was the name of the TV ad, and oh my word,
it's pretty smart. It was good. It's funny. You know what's I think is interesting for me is I'm terrible at taking pictures. I've actually been working on it really hard to like take more pictures because my natural intention in all of these things, I don't take notes in class. I don't take notes in meetings. I don't take pictures of things. I just kind of rely on my memory, which is astounding considering how bad my memory can be. But one of the things that I do find is that I tend to – you know, I just have it's just never been something for me. Whereas when I actually like have camera rolls and pictures where I can actually like use them to jog memories, I actually do better giving complete, you know, capturings of stories and stuff. But, you know, part of my thing is I like to adjust stories as time goes on, make them more interesting, which some people think is lying, and I like to say making more interesting. You know, it's
creativity. I got
yeah,
you.
Exactly. This is the storyteller in me, and it's, you know, I always have these awesome stories of, you know, what happened this last weekend. And it's because I've told the story like 2 or 3 times, so now I've actually got it like nailed down to the interesting details and the interesting pattern. But part of like having pictures, not having pictures allows me to be a little more liberal in details. I don't know. It's interesting. But at the same time, when I do have pictures, when I do have videos at different events, it's really, 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 really cool to be able to go back. And I don't think I want to go to the, I don't want to get to the point where I take pictures of everything and, you know, I miss out on what's happening. But at the same time, yeah, I want more detail. I want more actual like recordings of what happened so that I can, you know, remember it, because I do have a notoriously bad memory.
Well, that's why the ideal thing is to hire someone to come along with you, take pictures for you so that you can be in the moment, enjoy it, and then you still got the photos when you're done.
So now the real question is...
Or some would argue, Google Glass.
So now the real question is this.
Take a picture, Google. Done. Move on with your life.
Do I hire somebody to record my life for me first, or do I hire someone to drive me around first? What's actually more valuable? I'm kind of leaning towards the driver. I'm a big fan of the chauffeur.
Clearly you live in the valley where there's traffic. I don't have that problem.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. You're right.
Depends on where you live. There's a third option here. yeah. So speaking of options,
yeah,
starting, I don't know, next year sometime, you will have another option for trading stocks.
Oh, baby. So this is what I've been waiting for.
Yeah. So, I got to put out my financial guru hat on here and give my disclaimer here. You should be investing for retirement. And in that investing in your 401k or your IRA or Roth IRA, your choice, you should probably be choosing an index fund of some sort. A fund, you know, which is nothing but a computer-run mutual fund that picks a whole bunch of different stocks and, you know, diversifies you fairly.
It's an algorithm that's designed to hit certain targets.
Yep, yep, exactly. And so, and it does it, and they're fairly cheap, and yeah, all 401ks have them. If you do if you go with Vanguard for your IRA, they've got some really good ones. The Vanguard Index Fund is a good one. The point is, when it comes to retirement and, you know, an actual like savings, do that. don't invest in single stocks for retirement.
So okay? Now that you've taken all the fun out of it,
don't worry. And I will say this, it's okay to invest in single stocks with fun money.
Apple.
Okay? Yes.
Or Target.
That is a perfect example.
Actually, Target's a good one to do right now. They're a little bit lower than they used to be.
That's true. That is true. So you can invest again in single stocks, you know, just for fun money, right?
Yeah.
For someone like me, that's like $100. For someone else with a lot more money, that could be a couple grand. You know, that's fine. Up until what will be next year, usually to do a stock trade costs $7 to $10.
That's okay. Expensive.
Now, what's nice about that is, you know, if you buy. If you traded one stock, your fee is $10. If you bought 100 stocks, your fee is $10. So it favored those who could trade a lot more, you know. And so the issue was
some purposefully.
yeah, you know, so it was like if you were buying a $10 stock, the fee was, or you know, buying and selling, right? The fee was essentially 200%, and because they charge you for both, and then you know, so you had an incentive to do like you know $1,000 or $2,000 to so the fee's only you know a small percentage, 1% or you know 0.5%. That's a lot of money for someone like me who, again, is going to be playing in the triple digits realm.
Yeah. triple digits.
So what's cool about it is, and I will admit that I have a desire to buy single stocks, and I would do it in three ways. The first one is I would buy stocks of companies that I'm a fan of, which I think for most of them, I actually already own them through the index fund because that's how they work. But it'd be cool to be like, yeah, I own Apple, because you would actually get like the prospectuses of these companies if you own the stock, because they send them out to the stockholders. But because you own an index fund, they send the prospectus to the index fund company. It's like Vanguard in my case, and I never actually see it. Mm-hmm. And then Vanguard sends me the prospectus of their index fund that tells me what the mix is. So if you owned, you know, individually that stock, you could see those annual reports and stuff, and that's kind of fun to get those. Plus, you could be like, yeah, I'm a stockholder of Disney. Or Apple, or Target, whatever. You know, just because.
I want to buy one Google stock.
Yeah, Google, whatever, right? Which would make this show hilarious because all of a sudden we'd be disclosing stuff left and right. Yeah, I just want to disclose that I'm an owner of Amazon and Google and Apple as we're talking about these.
You know what we should do? Oh my gosh, we should set up a mutual fund where, like, you and I, and like 10 friends, all buy one Google stock. we all throw in like $50.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, just fun stuff like that. I think it would be cool. So that's the first type. The other type that I think would be cool to do are what I would call opportunity stocks. Again, this is complete 100% gambling, what I'm talking about right now. Okay, so you only do it with fun money. I feel very passionate that I should make that clear. But there are certain situations where you think about like the Facebook IPO and the stock dropped and you're like, this is a legitimately good company. The stock price is just cheap right now. It'd be nice to be able to buy a couple shares.
It would be.
As you know, total gamble, but it might work out. Twitter, an example. I'm fairly confident that Square, when they IPO, will be a great gamble. Like you said about like right now, Target. Not a bad idea, right? If you had a couple hundred dollars, sure, why not? Throw it at it, see what happens.
Yeah,
it'd be fun to try to time some of the Apple announcement stuff, right?
Yeah.
Where the stock price drops. Oh, okay, I'm going to pick some up, and then you sell afterwards. Or is it the other way around? I can't remember. But, you know.
That's the problem, right?
And that would be fun. Then the third one is I think it would be fun to experiment with the day trading-esque type stuff where you're not really following the tech news type stuff, but, you know, looking at stock patterns and trying to make predictions off of that. But that's more, again, the math nerd in me coming out, I think would be fun. Okay. But it's, to me, it's not worth doing that all at $7 to $10 because I'm cheap. Okay.
Right.
And here's the entire point of that entire diatribe. There is a new app that is coming out next year, and you can get on the wait list right now, called Robinhood. We'll have a link to the article that has it, but it's just robinhood.io.
I just signed up for it.
There you go. So you're on the wait list behind me. They're doing something like they do with Mailbox, where you kind of got to get in line. But here's what's crazy. Zero commission trading.
Oh, baby. That's exciting.
Boom. And what's cool about it is it's got a whole bunch of other features like app tracking and crowdsourcing stuff. But apparently these are a couple geniuses from Stanford or Harvard or, you know, one of those schools, where they have built other real-time analysis and analytical and information app stuff. And they sold those or, you know, to other companies, and they have finally decided to go out on their own and, you know, and make an app. And I guess the hardest part is actually getting accredited to buy and sell stocks.
Hmm.
They went through that entire process and figured out how to do it, which is cool. Apparently, for an accredited like institution, trading stocks is like pennies. It doesn't cost much. And so companies like StockTrade and, E-Trade, they make a ton of money off of those $7 to $10 transaction fees, which is right. how they make their money. And so they're like, nope, it's okay. We are going to significantly reduce that. So the trading fee is zero. They have a zero minimum deposit. they don't charge you any money for real-time market data. You know, they got insured. And so the big question is, well, how are they figuring out how to do that? One of the ways is if you've got money in the account, they're going to get interest off that account. They'll get to keep that interest. They're not going to give it to you. Which is fine. They can have it. That's how they keep it free. They'll be able to sell some API access to other companies. So you can imagine you go to Yahoo Finance and you say, oh, I want to buy this stock. And they say, sure, do it for free. Click buy. They can use their API. Amazon paid to get access. You did not. Nice. Or not Amazon. Yahoo paid to get access. You didn't have to. That could work. And then there was another more technical thing that had to do with trading that they can make money off of it. But anyways, Robinhood looks like a slick little app. It comes out later next year, early next year, I guess is the way to say it. And it looked pretty cool. I got excited about it. I might be able to live my dream.
Early next year is like next month, right? I mean, technically speaking, you know, according to the calendars.
Is that, okay. Let's see.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that the next 3 months would be the first quarter of 2014. We're talking the next 3 months, not like the next 15 months, right?
I would say sometime in the first quarter would be my guess.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
Cool.
And Perfect. They don't give an explicit date, which I'm okay with. But again, you can sign up today to get on the wait list. Trading's free. So, you know, if you had that stock or two.
Dude, they're going to make so much money.
Oh, I'm going to promote the heck out of them.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Again, just be like, oh, I mean, how fun would it be, right? This is the kind of stuff that you would love, where you're in a conversation and someone makes some comment about Amazon. You're like, oh, yeah, I really like what they say. Well, I have to disclose that I'm an actual owner of Amazon, so you know.
That's stupid.
Oh, yeah, but what about Facebook? Oh, yeah, well, I have an opinion. Well, I just have to disclose real quick that I'm actually the owner of Facebook.
It's that stupid Facebook game that you had me play, like that tycoon thing, except it's real.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and...
Well, yeah.
You know, which means they have to lose really is rough. Which is
yeah.
why you do it with fun money.
Again, fun money only, right? We're not talking about real investing here. It's literally for entertainment purposes only. It's just cheaper than a movie ticket, potentially. Or not.
Yeah, I'm going to say it depends on how much you throw in there.
Me, it's like I will probably end up throwing in like $100 just for the fun of it. And maybe, like I said, I will probably pick a company or two that I'm a fan of, just so I can own them, and maybe like print off a certificate or something.
I want to do. Oh my gosh, I got the stock.
Because that's how it works still.
Exactly. I definitely want to create a mutual fund, though. I want to be a mutual fund manager. What does your mutual fund buy? We bought a stock of Google.
Yay!
But cool. I guess so it's kind of late, so I'm gonna do my two stories really super fast.
Okay.
Speaking of stock prices, BlackBerry stock is not doing terrible, even though it should be. They lost like $4 billion this last quarter. A lot of money.
Yeah.
But they also signed a deal with Foxconn, the dudes who make the Apple iPhone, to make their next phone. So everybody's they're feeling good about it. They're feeling good. Wrongly, they should feel bad about it. But
I can't believe they're not dead yet.
I know. But you predicted they'd make it through the year.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm the one that can't believe that they didn't make it. Or that they did make it, I mean. But the last big story, prices finally came out on the Mac Pro. And I'm getting one. I'm not getting one. I can't afford it. The fully decked out, if you were to get their, like, you know, their top of the line does everything version, $9,600. Oh baby.
Oh, that's it, huh?
But
what's the minimum? Like, what would get me in the door? What's the entry?
So the cheapest one, 3G's, $2,900 for their base model one. You can upgrade that one. That's probably the one I'll get. I'll upgrade the RAM or something because it comes with like it's got like less RAM than my Mini has. The base model Mac Pro, which I think is astounding. But it's like 8 gigs. But $3,900 is kind of the one that everybody thinks is they're gonna really. That's the one that's gonna sell like crazy.
$4,000 machine.
Well, that's before you upgrade it with whatever you need it to have, more RAM, more hard drive space. But yeah, that's kind of your $4,000 machine. What's interesting is I was all about adjusting for inflation this week. Adjusted for inflation. Not the most expensive computer that Apple's ever sold. The Lisa actually takes the cake.
The Lisa.
I know. Yeah. There's a reason nobody bought it. It's because it was ridiculously expensive, adjusted for inflation. These are really expensive, but what I think is interesting is, A, they've completely sold out. They've actually stopped taking orders because they pushed deliveries out to, like, March, and we're just like, you know what, we kind of could quit it. We can't do this anymore. They're completely out. They're completely backlogged. So there's huge, enormous pent-up demand for these things. Initial reviews are like, it's freaking awesome. But what's really, really fascinating about this, and this kind of goes back to articles that we had read early on, we talked about, was that it's actually really competitive. I mean, the simple reality of it is, you're not, if you were to build a desk, you know, if you were to build a computer that would live in your office with you, you know, so we're discounting server racks. You're building a very high-end dual graphics cards, you know, high-end main processor, everything, put it together. The reality of it is it's not that expensive compared to, you know, for what you're getting. You know, they've done that by building their own custom GPUs and basing it off of what's already out there. And so it allows them to basically, you know, save money on the manufacturing because they're not buying a stock chip, but it's got all the same performance because it's basically a stock chip. But they're able to do it for less. And so they've effectively been able to build really and truly the only real option for incredibly high-end computers, that reasonable option. As you're talking about, great price, great packaging, you know, great heat usage, low power usage, you know, small, you know, space. And that's the other thing is everybody's like, yeah, you could build that computer, but it's going to take, you know, 8 times as much space. So, and it'll cost basically as much, and you have to build it yourself. You have to worry about your own, like, compatibility issues and making sure everything interfaces right, and you have to build it yourself. Like, basically nobody else has these. You can't just go to like Dell and buy one of these like supercomputers. And so it's a cool little computer because of that. This is the luxury of the luxury when it comes to the Apple brand. But if you actually have a need for it, it's not ridiculous at all. It's actually very reasonably priced. I say all that because I'm desperately trying to figure out what I could possibly need this for so I can justify buying one.
I wish their storage wasn't so small.
I know. That's the biggest problem. Well,
like, except why would you get 256 gigabytes of flash? I don't understand.
But what they want you to do is they want you to get what you probably should do is probably the most affordable way to do it is to do the Fire the Thunderbolt 2.0 to, you know, external storage. That's what they're encouraging you to do. The reason why they do that is because I think what they really expect is people to just stick with the base level, the 256. And basically what that means is that your program and your, like, your programs and your operating system will live in the tower. All of your content will live somewhere else. External drive sitting next to it, you know, over your Thunderbolt cables. That's the expectation from Apple. You know, so if you've got a terabyte sized, you know, you're not supposed to buy, you are not supposed to buy the internal storage. That's the long and short of it. And they're, you know, whereas the RAM, you know, I don't know what you're supposed to do about the RAM. That's just expensive. I don't know. I haven't read anything about how expandable it is. I'm not sure if you can actually do that yourself and buy.
It's pretty expandable, but.
Yeah, well, it is expandable, but I just don't know if it's like, I don't know if it's like the Mac Mini where it's just laptop RAM and you can do it yourself, or if it's something where, you know, you're really better off having Apple do it for you, or if it's like the Air and it's soldered to the computer and you're just stuck. You get whatever you get. I don't know. This is the long and short of what I'm trying to get at.
I'm not going to buy a new computer anytime soon. I'm very certain of it. Hence the sponsor of this week's tech podcast, Memory Clean. I don't have to for a while. But I was like, I'm still kind of like, I don't know what I would, you know, if I were to get a new one today, what would I get? And, you know, there's a part of me that was like, you know, would I go with another iMac if I could, you know, do an iPad iMac combo? Or, you know, my other thought was, I don't know, maybe the Mac Pro would make sense and do an external, you know, if I were going to do something on the desktop, would a Mac Pro make sense? And
yes. Yes, it would.
They just put, well, they put the Mac Pro on a totally different level with the iMac, mm-hmm. right? Where, like, your 27-inch iMac is $1,799, $1,800, and your bottom line Mac Pro without a monitor is $3,000. And, you know, to get a 27-inch monitor is another 1,000. And so you're just like...
One of them is an industrial tool that requires a capital commitment with some sort of a, you know, with an expenditure account. I mean, it is a workhorse, and if it does not generate money, there's no point in owning it. Whereas the iMac, it's hard to justify without an actual, like, money-making thing, but it's not impossible. It's just a luxury. The difference is the iMac is a luxury computer. The Mac Pro is a professional tool. And,
yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
You know, and you know, with, like I said, I'm desperately trying. I've been talking to my boss for the last, like, 4 weeks as we try to come up with a reason to justify buying one. Every time I come up with something, my boss is always like, yeah, but we don't need that. I'm like, Bob, just imagine.
There's different types of technology, right? There's the just-in-time technology and then the just-in-case technology. He's getting stuck in the just-in-time where, we need something new. Let's get this one. What he doesn't understand and what you need to help communicate with him is that if you got this, which would be this just-in-case, it would give you the possibilities to do stuff. And what would happen is that you would start to think of projects and think of things that you could do because you have this computer. And eventually you'd go, man, we couldn't have done this if we didn't have it. It's a good thing we had this computer because we couldn't have done it otherwise. That's the exact same thing that we talk about with learning lessons, right? Where if you learn a new skill, all of a sudden you start to think of ways and come up with solutions that involve that skill that you wouldn't have thought of because you didn't have that skill. It's invaluable. You know, you obviously got to balance it out with, you know, with being reasonable. But that's like the number one reason for going out and learning a new skill, doing something interesting, because you never know how it's going to come back, because all of a sudden one day you'll find yourself using it. I think I was talking to this friend about about business school, and we were doing this value chain stuff, and we had a case study on reverse auctions, and the typical format is everyone reads this 20-page document, and then we talk about it for like an hour and a half in class, and each week a new team leads to discussion essentially, and they're okay. You learn a lot. They're not exactly the most engaging thing. If you get a good team, it's good. If you don't, it's miserable. And so we were doing this again, this idea of a reverse auction where essentially you know, a supplier or a manufacturer goes, hey, we need supplies. We want the cheapest amount, not the highest. And so they go out and you can do an auction thing, and the goal is to get the cheapest. What, you're giving me like the weird look.
Oh, sorry. I'm go with it.
Messing with settings? All right. Okay. So we had this case to do it, and I sat there and went, why don't we just mock up a real quick simulation via a website that, you know, that does reverse auction? And so, like, over the weekend, I built this simulation and gave everyone accounts and signed them all up and did it. And it was one of those where we did really well, and the professor loved it, and I actually got called in for – you know, a few years afterwards, every time we taught that class to run the simulation. And, you know, people were just like, wow, man, how did you do that? And I was like, well, I had just learned the skill. I wasn't thinking, oh, you know what? I got a simulation class coming up. Right. I need to learn HTML. No, but because I had that skill, I came up with a unique solution to teach that lesson that no one else could have. So, you need to try to communicate that lesson to your boss to say that's why we need this, not because we need it today, but because it will enable us to come up with solutions tomorrow that you can't even fathom today.
You know what the really easy justification on all this is? And he didn't
buy
it. You
just play him this section back too. But go ahead. Say,
basically, this is the crazy part. The software that I use on my computer costs more than the highest upgraded version of the Mac Pro. I mean,
there you go.
That to me, that should make it an easy case. Bob, our graphics will look beautiful when I'm, you know, building these things. I mean, it's just going to be ridiculous.
Well, you sit there and say they'll run smooth, you won't have any issues, therefore you will be more productive and be able to spend your time on more high value activities rather than fighting with the software.
You know what he's going to ask me? He's going to ask me, does it run smoothly right now? And I'll be like,
maybe.
Yeah. I don't understand what your point is, Bob.
It's okay. Yeah, today. Let's think about tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah. The future,
well,
man.
I guess now you know what you got to do, right?
Yeah, true.
Bob, it can't run this really expensive program and iTunes and Photoshop and all these other programs at once. We need a new one.
Yeah, you know what the worst part about it is? It can. I actually have a good computer. I just want a better
one. If you got a good computer, you know. Actually, that's the secret with an HP. They go, oh, you want a new laptop or a new monitor? They go, what you do is you create some ridiculous, just redonkulous Excel spreadsheet. And then you go, I can't run this Excel spreadsheet on my computer anymore. This is mission critical. Dude, that's – I kid you not. I had this. It was so funny. This entire team, not my team, but one that I you know, sat next to me.
Yeah.
Pretty much that was what they did. Every single one of them. New computers, new beautiful 27-inch monitors. They're like, yeah, we needed this to run our spreadsheets. And I'm just like, what? Like, how complicated are these? Oh, these are really complicated.
Yeah, they're big deals,
really,
man.
Yeah, you know, we tried to optimize as best we could, and it's just, optimize for what? But, yeah, there's ways to get it done. It's pretty funny, but wow, that's an awesome machine. I don't think I could get one, unfortunately.
Yeah, neither can I.
But I think I'm stuck with the 21-inch iMac for now. Did they get rid of the middle section? I was looking at the Compare Your Mac stuff. Maybe it's in the iMac. I feel like, yeah, there's just a 21 and a 27, huh? They used to have like a 25. Dang. 21's okay. I like it. It works. 27 would be better. Surprise, surprise.
Wouldn't it?
All right, man. For some reason, I'm just revving up. I don't understand what happened there.
I'm going to say, dude, you're getting going all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's weird. It happens. But that's okay. That is okay. So Christmas is coming up. You excited?
Heck yeah, man.
Pretty confident you're going to make out okay?
BTW, just bracing you for this. Your Christmas present from me is not going to get to you until Thursday.
Okay.
There was a.
I saw your tweet about that.
Oh, about the price tags?
Not for me in specific. No, about something about last day of shipping, apparently.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there was freshness concerns, and so we, you know, it just, it.
Okay.
Basically, what happened was I set the price tags for like what I was willing to pay for different things for different people, and shipping yours overnight so it would get there Tuesday was like $65.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry.
And I was
about
like,
it.
But if it got there Thursday, it was like $25. And I was like, well, okay, I can justify that. So it made a little more sense. Yeah, so don't worry.
Okay.
It's coming and it'll be worth the wait. But as will I make out on Christmas? You know, James, I'm a gracious gift receiver. If I get anything, I feel blessed and lucky to have it, and you know, I'm not, you know, whatever, you know. It's just what it is. I'm going with it. But yeah, I'm feeling pretty lucky this year. yeah, we'll see. I just like the Christmas spirit of it all. It'll be weird. It'll be the first year that it's just me and our parents.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa's off doing her thing. You're off doing your thing. Everybody's off doing their things. Mm-hmm. But except me.
Cool, cool, man.
Yeah. You excited?
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't sound so excited, man. You might fool somebody.
I've been busy, man. Like, yeah. December was just a full throttle, don't slow down type of month, you know? And it was funny, I was talking with a friend, it was this morning before church started. And he just got back from a missions trip and wanted to share, you know, photos and tell stories and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, we should totally do it. I'm not busy at all. And I go, I'm not working anymore. I'm off for the holiday. And he goes, oh, okay, well, what about lunch today? And I was like, oh well, I can't do lunch today because Jesse's got worship team practice, and then we have high school, and then I got the podcast afterwards. He's like, okay, well, what about dinner on Monday? I went, oh, well, we can't do dinner on Monday because, and I'm like, and Tuesday is obviously Christmas Eve, and then Wednesday is Christmas, and then I was like, but I could go Thursday, and he's like, well, I'm traveling on Thursday. I'm like, oh, well, you know, we're just like, man, ridiculously busy. I'm not supposed to be, but
yeah,
apparently we are, so that was kind of, I was like, oh, man. Oh well,
it was weird.
I should not be busy after Christmas. We'll see if that actually happens.
Yeah, theoretically.
I'll figure out ways to make myself busy. As you should, you know, you're young. Just keep going. You can handle it.
I got the energy, man.
Exactly, exactly. Hey, you know what? I'm gonna call it.
All right.
We've been going quite long enough. Hey, thanks everyone for holding on. We super duper appreciate it. And yeah, we'll talk to you next week. It should be the we'll be on the edge of 2013. We might talk about predictions and stuff or not. We'll see. you have to watch or listen and find out. So on that note, I am James Furlow and my brother, who looks like a hipster with his new haircut, is Matthew Furlow. And we will talk next time. I don't know if you noticed this because I don't think you're a big Pinterest user, but they changed something on their app, and now I get like a notification every single time someone does something.
That's annoying.
super annoying, especially since it's on my watch. And so, I know, I'm just like, who cares that so-and-so started a new pin board? Why are you showing me this right now? So I got to figure out how to change that. These whole background updates, you know, it just happens now. I don't know about it. All of a sudden, I'm like, why am I getting all these notifications? Right. Oh, app update. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Apple.
the joys of being on the bleeding edge.